Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, everybody.
We haven't had one of these in like a month. I'm really sorry. We should explain where the hell we've been, right?
Yeah,
probably. Before we do that, our special guest for our little return show here. First of all, thanks to the live chat for showing up. Really appreciate it. We'll be back on YouTube for the foreseeable future, so you can hang out with us every week after this, hopefully. But joining us for today's show, it's Brady Hartle. Brady, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been quite a while, I think, actually.
It's been like months and months and months, I think. Maybe not a year, but months and months. But it's good to have you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
So where the heck have we been? First, there was Anime Expo. Mm-hmm. Then there was Preview Guide. Mm-hmm. But more immediately, Anime Expo. So for people who don't go to a lot of anime conventions, there's this thing called Con Crud. That has, like, a cutesy nickname, but if you catch it, and it's just the result of shaking too many hands, and it's snotty, sweaty hands at conventions for 4 days, 5 days. We're at Anime Expo for almost a week when we go. Nonstop handshaking and crushing in amongst a bunch of sweaty-ass nerds and stuff.
Yeah.
You get sick. And Con Crud is kind of a cutesy little nickname, but for us it turned into, like, Do you know like how the permafrost is melting and they're releasing like old diseases, like the plague is coming out of it? Like, it feels like maybe that somehow got into the water at anime, because I have not been that sick in a long time, and then you of course got it.
Well, what's funny is like I feel like I wouldn't have gotten sick from the convention if I hadn't gotten it from you. I like somehow escaped it, which is rare for me, but I was fine for about 5 days after the con, and you were horribly sick, and then I caught it from you after you were like, I'm recovering, and I'm like, shit.
Yeah, the minute I'm recovering.
And then I was sick for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was bad news. But then
somehow after hanging with you guys, I did not get anything, and I am like susceptible to con crud.
I'm pretty sure I got at least one other person sick. I just don't want to reveal who it is, because then they'll like find out.
You.
Yeah, right. They're like,
you but, did this to me. You.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't want that hanging over my head. So we also adopted a new kitten, which Jacob is holding right now. But that was like a few days ago.
This is Philly.
Yeah, that's Philly. Our other cat's name is Boston. That's Philadelphia. Oh, here's
and
the other
this
cat.
This is Boston.
So I do want to point out
comparison, if you will appreciate.
I do want to point out that Boston is literally exactly four times the size of the kitten. The kitten's 4 pounds. Boston is 16. So four times the size.
I like that was such a kid. It's like, oh,
yeah,
like, oh,
yeah. It's good.
Giant.
It's like, and now I put the kitten in a time machine, and so that's been fun. So sorry we've been gone for so long. I was also absolutely swamped with work the last couple weeks. July is usually the busiest month of the year for us, mm-hmm. Just in terms of having to create content. So it's been really busy. I'm sorry, but we're back. Brady, how's it been for you, man? It's been a while since you've been on the show. You're plugging away on stuff for Discotech, right?
Yeah. So, we finally got approvals on the features for Yurusei Yatsura, Beautiful Dreamer.
Oh, cool. All right. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I just have to finish up stuff, do some proofing. A friend of mine's going to help me proof some stuff on it, and I got to get that over to Justin. Still waiting for like the menu approvals on that, but it means like we're not held back on just finishing the actual content, which is great. Kaiba is coming soon. That's a really, really cool show. We spent a lot of extra love on that, like we did Kyoso Giga. It's about, I would say, on the same kind of level as that show. It's really neat. That's coming soon. I just sent off the final fixed packaging yesterday, so that should be, it'll like with most Discotech stuff, it'll probably show up at conventions first.
Right.
I know people were concerned about Fatal Fury, the movie, being pushed back. And then I guess they were concerned about, like, content or something with that. Mm. And so it's not – there's no content at all. It was a one of the publishers wanted the logo changed on it, essentially. So and to do that, is if you miss your date one day, you have to push it a whole other month. And it just took a little bit longer to get the new logo approved. But nothing in the release was changed, so don't worry about that. There's no removals. All the stuff that was on the DVD is still there, proofs, all that stuff. So there's no issue there. It's just that was one dumb little logo we had to change, and then that's off to the printer too. So that should be showing up. And I guess if you look around conventions, once that gets there, you could probably get that before Street Date too. So
cool. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the update.
Yeah, thanks for...
That's a lot of stuff. You're working on a lot of shit.
Yeah, there's one... We're going to do... me and Mike Toole will be doing another panel at Otakon. So
right.
We're going to be announcing something pretty big that I think people are going to be really jazzed for. And that has... Like, working on stuff for that has taken a lot of my time, Justin's time, and we're really putting a lot into this specific thing. And I think that people will enjoy all the stuff that we found for this one movie. And
is it Neon Genesis Evangelion TV?
Yeah, right. Like anybody could afford that in a million years. Like, I don't even think Funimation or has the pockets to do that. Like, I don't think anybody
Discotech doesn't have $40 million laying around. Or
yeah, I wish that would make things easier.
Yeah, that's absurd. Well, that's cool. So we were all at Anime Expo. So we'll get to that in a second. Talk about it briefly. It was a couple weeks ago at this point, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But there is some site business first. I just wanted to point out that our weekly feature, This Week in Anime, is now twice weekly, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Jacob, why don't you tell us some of the changes to This Week in Anime?
Well, so originally, This Week in Anime was our two hosts, Nick and Mitchie, going over the season, as much as they could, as many shows as they could, at least four, and then, between four and eight shows a week. And it was a bit, much, and we were like, well, I really like this format, I really like talking about these episodes more informally, we had the formal episode reviews, but also, a formal chat style talking about these episodes, but we need to break it up maybe by topic. But the problem, of course, with doing that is, in order to cover more topics, you have to have more people watching more shows. Not, two people can't watch the whole season. And so,
yeah. I mean, they can, but then be expected to comment,
It's a little much.
In a lucid way, yeah. It's too
I'm
much.
Not even sure. I don't think one person can watch, 30 things a season.
They
enough.
Can.
I mean...
It's just consumption at that point, though.
Yeah.
You're just consuming for,
There's not really enough hours in the day. It would be too much. So, I joined the team, and along with a new contributor, Steve, who is at Vestnet on Twitter. Some of you all know him. He's responsible for the... Because this went up to hundreds of thousands of retweets, I think. He's responsible for the Be Strong, Dear Brother meme that everybody...
Oh. Made.
And anyway, so... But that... He's a very funny guy, and he has, very different tastes, I think, from the three of us, because we were trying to sort of spread out to cover as much of the season as possible and have different takes. And so the four of us, two at a time, depending on what the topic is... We'll host whatever the show is. So first we did My Hero Academia, and then we did A Centaur's Life. I think coming up we have our focus is going to be on The Reflection, but it'll be a different topic every column. So instead of having one column that covers seven shows,
you're not necessarily covering the show. You're just talking about the
What's
thing
the
that's
most
interesting
about
so
it.
So this week it was about My Hero Academia, and specifically you were talking about Stain and
his ethos.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about A Centaur's Life and, what are the politics of that?
That's today's.
Yes,
just on A Centaur's Life, which we'll talk about that show. but it's cool. It's a little more formatted like Answer Man now, and you'll find it in the main feed. And it's
basically
just,
Answer Man for subjective opinions is kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of how we pitched it.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I like it. Check it out Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if you like it, tell people it exists. That helps us. Okay, that's enough site. I think that's pretty much all the site business. Vice and Luna's still going. Read that. Mm-hmm. We're wrapping up a storyline. Uh-huh. Check it out. okay, Anime Expo was a month ago. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I also went to San Diego. So we could talk about conventions. Mm-hmm. Brady, you were also at AX.
My first one.
Was it? that was not your first Anime Expo.
Yeah, first Anime Expo. I've mostly went to Otakon, Katsucon, stuff on the East Coast.
Right, because you're an East Coast boy.
Yeah, I'm East Coast boy.
So to speak.
Baltimore. I'm from Balmer.
Hmm.
Mostly there, and I'd been to like Akon and stuff for work before, but never Anime Expo. So it was a much different experience.
That's cool. That's exciting then. So tell me, what was your impression?
Well, I was surprised how many people there were. I've done E3 a bunch of times, so like I was like really familiar with the convention center and everything.
Yeah,
like I knew where I was going and where things were. I know that like I would not have wanted to be a general attendee because it was just, there's too much BS with getting in and all the line stuff. And then like they routed you inside and then outside to go through security with all the metal detectors and stuff. I was very lucky that I was exhibitor. So like, I would just be like, hey, I'm an exhibitor. And they would just let me through everything.
Exhibitor badge is a good one to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my experience would have sucked really badly if I was just like a normal person, because I was not a normal person, but like a normal, like, because I was working the con. My day job is I work at Lab Zero, so I was working the booth in the exhibitor hall for a lot of the time. So like, I felt like a lot luckier that I could just sort of skip everything.
Yeah, I mean, so they do make that show easy to get around if you're industry or, you know,
press
or professional. It was very easy for us.
Thank God, because the first day, Saturday,
was a nightmare for the security problem. Like, they basically, the SPJA only put, like, a handful, like, two bag check lines.
Yeah.
Two bag check lines. For a convention center
per
that's
door.
Supposed to hold 100,000, over 100,000 people,
uh-huh.
two bag checks.
Per door. So four total, but most people are going to the main one.
Four total is still
it's
laughable.
Really, yeah.
That is still like, what the fuck were you thinking? But they fixed it like immediately. Sunday, they had everything back on track. Everything was working fine by then. And then we didn't hear another peep about it for the rest of the show. But Saturday was a fucking nightmare. While I was at the show, got contacted by the SPJA to come down and interview them about the security thing, and we ran the interview during the show.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty upfront about it, I thought. Brady, you were saying?
Oh, just that I don't know what happened, but most people on Friday, I think it was, like, if you were in line, you didn't get to do anything on Friday. Like, you lost, like, if you registered for 3 days, you lost your Friday pretty much being in line.
Well, Saturday was the first day of the show. Friday.
Oh,
night
wait a
was,
minute! It was Saturday through Tuesday. That's right.
Yeah, which was weird. And next year, I think it's actually not on the 4th of July. I think it's after the 4th
nice.
Of July. Yeah,
so,
I think it's July
5, 6, 7, 8
next
Sometimes
year.
Sometimes you
want to
eat
like
hot dogs and look at fireworks, you know.
Well, I mean, the 4th of July will be on like a Wednesday this year or something, so they're not going to stretch the con all the way back to, so it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Ugh, God, stop! Yeah. Like,
go
we
ahead.
Get it. The 4th of July, it's not that important.
But yeah, like I meant Saturday though. Like, if you had like a Saturday, you had like a 4 day pass, you lost your Saturday, like, completely, if you're in line.
Yeah, yeah, but, and they refunded all that. Like, if you, they gave you a free day and all that extra shit, from what
I
understand.
Oh, did they? That's good. Cool.
Yeah, they did their best to make amends. Like, that was a security, like, I've been to conventions, I've been doing this a long time, I've been to conventions where they had massive security problems, and they refused to own up to it, and didn't make it better, and just let, and just fucked people.
Yeah.
And, like, AX has done similar things to that before, but this year they seem like they were on top of it, taking care of people. It was a good response. Like, I've seen a lot of responses to crises like that.
Yeah.
And to me, it was an adequate response. But, yeah. Anyway.
That's pretty good.
So, what did you think of, like, the show itself? Did it feel... Because, so did it feel to you like it does to me? Like, the East Coast conventions feel more personal and more, like... I hate to say fan-driven, but fan-driven. And, like, AX is, like, a business show.
Business,
like,
yeah.
And that doesn't
like,
mean, like, there's TED Talks on statistics. That just means, like, everything is very corporate.
Mm-hmm.
at AX.
Well, there's, right. I mean, like, very specifically, the biggest difference is, like, there's not very many fan-driven panels like stuff that Mike Toole would do or our buddy Hazukari or anybody. Like, any of those kind of panels were just, like, not there. It was mostly,
well, they
like,
were.
Here's yeah, industry stuff. To, yeah. Here's like, here's our, we're announcing all these titles. Here's about this title. Here's the title we're promoting. Like, a lot of the panels seem to be mostly just about business stuff.
Yeah, industry.
Yeah,
you
I would
know,
say
voice
that
actors.
Most of the stuff you're talking about, because I looked and I was like, oh yeah, like all that stuff is like shoved to Monday, and there's still industry panels on Monday. But like,
yeah,
I saw most of the stuff that was like fan driven was Monday, or it was 18 plus. If it's 18 plus, they have to squish all of those into the night times on every day. So
yeah. We
and it wasn't like very much of it. It didn't seem.
If you were at our panel, that was like Saturday night at like 9:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. or something like that. Thanks for coming out.
Yes,
it was
thank
a kind
you.
Of a weird
I,
time.
I was surprised by the turnout. I was like, wow,
yeah,
you guys
we
are
did
great.
Okay, even though it was really late on Saturday. We were up against a concert and like, yeah, a bunch of the main events. We were opposite that. So
we were like, hey, thanks for picking us instead.
It's fine. You know, I'm happy they give us a panel. So, and then I did another panel on Monday night that was pretty well attended too, that was all about breaking into anime journalism. Mm-hmm. If you see me at a convention, I'm usually trying to run that panel somewhere. Mm-hmm. I will be at Otakon. Unfortunately, Jacob's not going, but he's going to help me out from here. Mm-hmm. So if you see me there, say hi. I'm not doing any panels or anything. I'm just covering the show. Otakon's panel submission thing, I always forget to do it in time, and I don't like being the guy who's like, hey, sorry I missed the deadline, but you've known me for a long time. I don't like taking advantage of those relationships. Because Otakon panel, Otakon is very... I don't want to say strict, but like in my experience, I know a lot of people who don't get their panels accepted at Otakon. Like, it's hard to get a panel there. Like, that's my understanding of the situation. So I don't want to, you know, do that thing where you're taking advantage or whatever.
Right.
But I will be there. You can see me. If you see me, say hi. So yeah, that's Anime Expo. It was okay. I saw, it was a good show this year. That show is so big that it's kind of...
You saw all the Eidarus.
I did. I went to Kawaii, Anisong Matsuri Super Kawaii.
Uh-huh. A four idol pileup.
Yes. A four idol, and it was a pileup. It was good. So I wanted to go to that because, I wanted to see the experience. They filled the Microsoft Theater. That's almost 8,000 people in that room with the pen lights and the idols. And so last year I was at Anime Expo and I went to the Aqua event. The Aquars.
It's Aqua.
The
it
Aqua.
Looks like Aquars.
I went to the Love Life Sunshine thing and they came out and they're like, yeah, and then they don't perform.
Yeah.
They just came out and were like, nice to meet you. And then they go backstage.
Show hadn't even aired yet.
Yeah, well, no, we watched the first episode right afterward, and that was supposed to be the big deal.
Yeah.
But I was there to see him sing and dance. Like, that's what you want to see idols do, right?
Yeah.
So this time, they actually had him performing. They started with Idolmaster Cinderella Girls, who, I don't want to throw shade, but they didn't really have much choreography. They kind of run out, they stand in one place, they do a little...
Aren't there 20 million of them?
They do this thing, the cat.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so weird seeing them do it in person because they're trying to get that choreography in the middle of a bunch of complicated dance moves, and it's supposed to be kind of random.
Uh-huh.
And it just anyway, they did that a lot. So it was the Cinderella Girls who came out and didn't have too much choreography, but their outfits looked really nice and their songs were good. And then it was the Wake Up Girls. Mm-hmm.
Wake Up Girls are my personal favorite because they're the screw up dorky idols. Like,
they're
really good.
Their
image is supposed to be dorks.
And honestly, they killed it. Like, they had much better choreography. Like, their costumes were kind of weird, but that was good. And like, their songs are pretty good. They were out there for too long. Like, it was too much Wake Up Girls. It was like 45 minutes of Wake Up
they
Girls.
They need the help. I mean, they're not the big.
I get it.
You know.
But anyway, so next was Wakure, right?
Wakure.
Macross Delta. Uh-huh. And let me tell you, like, Juna, the singer,
I don't know the name.
Okay, well, it's Juna, and then the other one just uses her stage name, I think. And I apologize, I can't remember her name right now. But Juna was, like, fucking just, like, you saw her convulsing to, like, get these notes out. Like, the song that she was singing, it felt like it had been written to torture a singer. And, like, just make them contort and, like, fuck up their throat as much. She was just like, like getting to the top of these, like,
it'd be
like,
great if it was totally turned into death metal.
Like, that, okay, so she would fucking that girl would destroy a death metal song. Like, she would be amazing.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's there promoting a solo album, like, she has her own solo album that's coming out around now, and, like, you know, I interviewed them, they're very nice and everything. So that show was pretty amazing. But then Aqua came out, and this is my perception of Aqua's Love Live. Love Live is very much the Disney of idols, right? Mm-hmm. It's extremely Disney. They bring the Aqua
Girls.
It's
the most accessible to, like, a younger crowd.
Well, I go to Disneyland all the time, and the Aqua Girls come out to exactly the music that it sounds like they play, like, before the parade's going to start, or when you're in, like, when the rope drop, they're like, have a magical day at Disneyland.
Yes.
That fucking music with the oboe and everything.
Yeah.
That's what they come out to. Mm-hmm. And it's choreographed and everything, and it sounds it sounds like a fucking Kingdom Hearts level. Mm-hmm.
That's what, I mean, like, Sunrise really figured it out with that, because idols, like, they speak to a lot of, they speak to older gentlemen and housewives and stuff like that, as well as some sort of a younger crowd, but I think, like, Sunrise really figured it out, like, what if we really expand this so it's as Disney as possible, and we can really actually pull in little girls as well.
And they definitely did.
So they have that other crowd. You have them. You have the idol diehards, but then let's get this other, like, and you just, you know, everybody loves Love Live, basically.
Yeah, and they came out as it's an incredibly polished act. Like, great choreography. They're doing, like, jumps over each other, like cheerleader stuff, like athleticism, like they're really good at it, and it is incredibly impressive. But honestly, the Wake Up Girls had my heart, like that they were like, oh shit, like,
they're the their image anyway, they're like very chosen, very focus grouped image is the dumpy failures, like, which is,
and
to
they're
me,
really
a funny,
good
a funny image,
and they were good. I would
and
rate
their
them
members are animal themed, like specifically big nasty carnivorous animals, a crocodile, a shark, a bear, etc.
That's
so
pretty good.
That's the Wake Up Girls are the best,
like I said, they were out there for too long, and I'm not saying I would buy their albums or anything, but they were, it was a good act, and overall, like, it was, I've always wanted to see that in person and feel that energy. There's nothing really like it. Uh-huh. And I was sitting up, I was in the mezzanine level with, here's a funny story. So I had a friend who's really, really into Idolmaster, Dylan. He actually did our Idolmaster interview. I invited him to come in and interview them because I thought it would be a once in a lifetime chance, right? Mm-hmm. He was in his like custom Idolmaster shirt that he had bought at Comic Cat with his things. And I was going to a VIP section and was like, hey, I've got these seats that are supposed to be really good. And he's like ready to fucking go fucking ham out there, right? Yeah. I get up to my, and I'm with the Bandai Sunrise executives, okay? There ain't no one going ham in my section at all. Everyone's like, let's see how the show goes. And you know, okay, that's what I'm up there for, you know, all right, this is the seating section that I've been placed in.
Yeah.
And I was like, you should go back down and use the, and he was like, I'm going to go back down and use the, and he was right in the middle of it and had the full experience.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, like, if I could have been in the middle of the crowd for like Love Live, like right when they're, I would have done it. I would have been down there just for that minute and then gotten out. Cause I just want to feel what it's like. I just want to be there in the center of all that energy.
Uh-huh.
And it was really cool. It was a really good show. I'm really glad I went. It's something I'm not going to forget or anything. And every time I go to, and I've been going to anime conventions for a long time, and every time I get the opportunity to see something like that, like a unique thing, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. And I regret not seeing Hatsune Miku when she was there a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, I almost considered, like, do I feel bad about missing that concert? Like, no, what I want to go, if they have, like, I know Konomi Suzuki performed, and I would have liked to see that. She's sort of fresh, but I want to see, like, the acts like Lisa or Aimer or something like that, when they have them there, then I will like cut anybody's throat to get in there and go see it.
Yeah.
Because that's the music that's the J-pop music that I like, the stuff that's sort of Sia imitant or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't, but the idols, like, I, you know, it's fun to watch them perform, but that music.
Yeah.
Not my kind of music.
And
like,
it was.
The Wake Up Girls is closest because there's a joke in there, but like, I still, it's not really, the vocals aren't
right
there.
It was ear splittingly loud. Like, extremely loud, which is good. That's what you want. But it was very, very loud. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So that was kind of AX. I want to briefly get through San Diego because we got a lot to talk about today, and we're like not even halfway through this list of shit we got to talk about.
Right.
I went to San Diego Comic Con, which I have not been to in a long time. You were gonna go with me, but we adopted a kitten. She was still getting acclimated.
It was the second or third day.
It was the second day, I think.
And I had to make sure that she didn't get in a fight with poor Boston, who was like, "What is this? What did you bring home?" You know,
which was disappointing to me. I'm happy we got the kitten and everything, but it was disappointing to me because I really wanted to take you down there and see Comic Con because you've never seen it,
right?
And like, Comic Con doesn't change; it just gets bigger and stays. It stays kind of the same, but it just gets bigger and louder and like more, and like, it is just this marketing orgy.
Yeah.
And so I live close enough to San Diego to where I can make a day trip out of San Diego. So I literally get on a train. It's an hour and a half, and the train from where I live to San Diego, it just goes right along the coast. So you just get to watch the ocean your whole way down. It's a nice little trip. You get off, you walk over to the convention center. It's not even a mile. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you have a badge already, it's great. You can walk in. And I went on Thursday, and that's kind of the low traffic day. And, you know, low traffic day at Comic-Con is the busiest fucking day at any other anime convention. But if you've been there a lot, like I have, Thursday was I was fine. Uh-huh. And I was kind of dreading it. I was like, I don't know about this. But I had the full Comic-Con experience in a single day. I showed up and got in a giant line that seemed like it was going to take forever, but it only took like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I bought this convention exclusive, this Death from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I bought that from a vendor that was having trouble with his card swiper, of course, right? That's the Comic-Con, and there's a line behind you of like, you've been in line for like half an hour for this fucking exclusive, and the swiper doesn't work. That's Comic-Con. I got sandwiched in between two really sweaty nerds right in front of the Star Wars booth.
Yeah.
Right? That happens all the time.
You get
stuck in foot traffic that you can't, and you can't move, and if you have a claustrophobia problem, it's really an issue.
Yeah.
I wandered into Hall H just in time to see the Netflix Death Note panel, which also was the panel for Bright, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, who were there. So
I got to see it, or was it just a co-panel?
No, it was a co-panel, and I got to see Will Smith, and the whole thing was moderated by Terry Crews for some reason, which is great because they had Terry Crews up there for Death Note. I read this manga. I love this manga, and you're like, I don't think you read that manga. Terry Crews. I don't think you read that manga.
Maybe he did.
Maybe he did. I don't know. That's the full experience. Like, you get into Hall H, you get a little swag, you see like a giant fucking movie star. I was there for the year Angelina Jolie went to Comic-Con, but didn't see her. This year Will Smith was there. I saw him. He was very excited to be there.
It is the new millennium, I have been told.
Yeah, right. I saw some giant marketing, like I was fucked in all various positions by various forms of marketing, right? Like, that's what you do at Comic-Con. It's just advertisements constantly. Like, you can't escape it. If you walk into the gas lamp district, you're surrounded by advertisements no matter what you do. Like, every surface is covered with an advertisement for a movie or a TV game, a TV show.
That's the best game.
Yeah, TV games. I loved them. So and then I got on a train and came back, and it was great. And I saw a bunch of friends and took a bunch of meetings, and it was a great experience. I will never do it any other way than that.
Yeah,
like the idea of having to get like a hotel room and worry about that. Like, if I don't have to, like, it was fine for the one day. Mm-hmm. But and so I'm telling you, if you already live in Southern California and have easy access to a badge, it's still kind of worth it to go. Mm. Otherwise, don't waste your fucking time.
and you managed to not get sick at this one.
I didn't get sick. I was only there for like 12 hours, so you know it wasn't that sick. So that was San Diego. Next year I will drag you down there and force you to partake.
Sounds good.
And you'll miss, because this year was the year they were pushing the Big Bang Theory spinoff, Young Sheldon, which makes me want to get upset just saying it. And that was everywhere. Yeah. And like all over everything. And it was also, if you want to see people get really fucking excited about Funko Pops,
oh god,
San Diego is the place to go. We go to a lot of conventions, and like there's giant booths of Funko Pops like everywhere. Uh-huh. But they're always like kind of empty, like there's not that many people at them. San Diego, fucking Funko Pops, right. Holy cow. Anyway, Brady, you're on the show chiefly to discuss our next subject, which is Netflix Castlevania, which you watched, and I watched. I wrote a full review. It's up on the site. I interviewed the producer of this thing. That's up on the site, too. Mm-hmm. I kind of loved Netflix Castlevania.
I liked it a lot. Too.
Brady, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. It's interesting how it's new, but also super kind of reverent to the actual games, like to the point where it's like, yeah, we have to have these exact characters, and they come in this way, and they act this way, and if you've played Symphony of the Night or Castlevania 3, like you'll like the very first scene is directly from Symphony of the Night, where it's like straight up Alucard's mom dying. Spoilers, but it's the first scene.
Yep.
And it's like that struck me because like it's like exactly from that, and it's neat to see a movie that it's kind of like a movie because it's only like four episodes, but miniseries, I guess, that is that reverent to the games, but also not so reverent that it's like held back by that.
Yeah, I found out they cut they straight up. It's not just he hasn't been introduced yet, but there's not going to be no Clint.
Oh,
yeah, they're like no Clint. Clint sucks. No Clint.
you mean Grant?
Grant, that's it. I was looking up his name. I was like, it's not Cliff. Grant. See, I don't even know his fucking name. They're not gonna have Grant in it, so yeah.
Grant Dynasty.
Which I believe Warren Ellis' comment was I didn't want to include him just because fuck that name. That's a stupid name.
Yeah.
Because Warren Ellis is a grumpy old man.
His name's supposed to be like Dynasty or something. I don't know. Like all of the name changes for Castlevania 3 always made sense to me because, like, because you take seriously Ralph C. Belmont. Like, would you take that seriously?
Ralph. Oh, no.
Yeah, no.
Like, he's Ralph in Japan. Like, that just never made sense to me. It's like, really? Ralph? Look, it's really interesting to see also, like, they very much did completely new designs, but all of the designs in the show took a lot to look back, took their time to look back at like things that had come out before. It was interesting to see Trevor, and I was like, does he really have did they just add that scar on his face because make it more badass or something? But no, that's like from the designs for like Curse of Darkness where he appears, and some of it's a little bit taken from the ill-fated Castlevania Judgment, which had like designs by the Death Note designer, and the fur stuff is like they took that and turned that into his fur coat, and like they had that really cool like scene where like he sort of comes alive towards the end, like gets rid of his coat, and like he's totally 100% got that Belmont strut, and is actually like, oh yeah, now he's kind of back. Like he's sort of depressed and morose in the beginning, and it's just kind of interesting how they took all these design things, like with Alucard specifically too. He looks very much like his Symphony of the Night, design by Ayami Kojima, but they like age him back to I guess it's like hundreds of years before Symphony of the Night, so like they age him back and like simplify it enough to make it work in animation. I think I really like the designs of the characters and stuff on this.
Yeah, I mean, the script, like you said, it's like a movie. It was intended to be one. It was intended to be the first movie in a trilogy.
Yeah.
It's not, like, I think it is obviously reworked so that it was a little bit less self-contained because it's obviously going to be the first four episodes of a TV series.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it feels like the first act of a big long thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Very self-contained. And those were that's the script that Igarashi actually signed off on, mm-hmm. the designer, of a lot of Castlevania stuff.
I appreciate how transparent Warren Ellis has been about the production process for this, because he said the number of redrafts that had to be corrected by Igarashi were eight. He said, I rewrote this eight times. He said, I would not be opposed to meeting Igarashi in a dark alleyway somewhere and strangling him with piano wire. That must suck, but like I'm glad that amount of communication was retained in order
to
keep
if he's responsible for making it good,
absolutely.
Then okay.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think Warren Ellis is a good choice to write a Castlevania thing, but I am also certain that it is only as good as it is because of the number of redrafts, because like it is a little bit more I think it keeps more in spirit of the game because it's managed by, because so many different people were like, well, let's make sure that this is going to speak to fans of this thing. And I'm not familiar with Castle. Again, I didn't know the name of the guy because my experience with Castlevania is first one, Simon's Quest, Symphony of the Night, and Castlevania 64, and that's it. I don't know anything about any of the others.
Yeah, well, so, if your experience was Castlevania 64, no wonder you didn't like come back to the franchise.
No, no,
that game is fucking horrible.
No, it was awful, but I'm just saying I was familiar with it. But like, so this story is new to me. The aesthetic is not, but the story is new to me, and I was like, oh, they're telling this really well. I wouldn't. So, with the exception of the part where he goes into town and talks to all the NPCs, I wouldn't have thought this is clearly a video game adaptation. That part of it, absolutely. It's a bit like, you know, and maybe also the part where he fights Alucard because he has no reason to fight in there, but they just had to fight. But that's not necessarily a video game only thing. That happens in a lot of stuff. So it didn't feel too video gamey. It just felt like a good capturing of the aesthetic.
They knew that had to be a climax at the end of the fourth episode, and, right. And them meeting Alucard and saying, hey, why don't we all team up? We all have the same goal. Is not yeah. much of a climax.
But they didn't come up with a great idea for them to fight. They're just measuring their dicks. Like, that's all it is.
I want to kill my dad. I want to kill your dad, too. All right.
All right, let's
get together.
I don't know. I was okay with it because there's very much this is a huge throwback to, like, 90s-style stuff, I feel. Like,
yeah.
The, you know, just Vampire Hunter D, all that really gory stuff from the 90s. And there would be shit like, you know, like, I'm a vampire hunter. I have to kill vampires. You're a vampire. I'm going to kill you. I don't care about, like, and also I think it sort of works because, like, Trevor is sort of like an asshole in the show. Like, he's distraught in the very beginning.
Brady, you wouldn't know a... Get lost. You wouldn't know a goddamn vampire if it jumped up and bit you on the end of your fucking dick. You never remember that? That's from Cyber City Oedo.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. Yes.
It's what I think
I, okay,
of.
Okay, I don't have Cyber City Oedo memorized.
I don't either. That's a
Let
notorious...
Let me get my tool in here.
That is a notorious line from that. I don't remember anything but that and the robot that, like... dissects why it doesn't make sense to insult a robot with the line "fuck you." Those are the only two things I remember about Cyber City Oedo.
I just—it's like a loving throwback to that, and
exactly.
So I was just all on board for any of the weird, like any of the stuff that was just sort of like, yeah, that doesn't really make 100% sense, but whatever. This is fun. This is really neat to watch and
yeah.
see that they're making something like this. I'm because like here's the thing: Igarashi doesn't work at Konami anymore, so for the last four or eight episodes, like. He's probably not have anything to do with them, so I'm interested to see where he goes when he just doesn't have any kind of, like, you know, at least, like, Igarashi was sort of the steward of Castlevania. He loved it, so
yeah,
he's not there anymore, so I wonder who, you know, I'm sure they have people at Konami who love Castlevania and everything, but probably not as much as Igarashi did, so I'm sort of curious to see, like, how far he goes away from the source material. Though I will say that, like, you know, his he also did a similar thing with G.I. Joe, and his take on G.I. Joe was really cool too. It was like a half hour or 40 minute OVA that they released I would say about 4 or 5 years ago, but it was also really cool, and he'd never seen G.I. Joe before, so and it was very reverent to the brand as well. It was just aged up a little bit for like PG-13, and it was pretty fun. It's called G.I. Joe Resolute. Like, look for that. It's pretty good to see like another thing like this he had written.
Yeah, I heard a lot of good things about that too. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's really good. I'm looking forward to the last 8. It occurred to me that they probably didn't have those 8 episodes written. I mean, I don't know. But maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I kind of hope that the entire thing's been at least plotted out and like there's an outline for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I would hate for it's like, well, those 4 episodes were great, but then, well,
off the rails.
Lightning in a bottle, it was literally just those 4. Like,
that would be
but who knows? You know, they haven't even really gotten inside Dracula's castle yet, so right. We'll see. Yeah. I bet it's going to be good.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to remain optimistic and happy about it. It was great.
I'm glad that Thorin Oakenshield like got to prove that he can act, because the Hobbit movies didn't give him a lot of opportunity to do so.
Yeah, the voice cast is fucking phenomenal. Uh-huh. Richard Armitage, who played the sexy dwarf Thorin Oakenshield in the Hobbit movies.
What a name.
He plays Trevor Belmont. He's great. Not a single bad line read. And then they got Gaius Baltar, who I don't remember his actor's name, from Battlestar Galactica, to play Alucard. Which, Gaius was my favorite character in Battlestar Galactica, and now he's playing my favorite video game hero, so I'm pretty happy. The whole thing really made me happy.
Me too. I was like, you know, this seems like a perfect tone exercise. Like, it just seems right. It seems like it's in the spirit of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, they even made Dracula's like rage justified and everything, and like they're really hammering the sort of, you know, 15th century church, which is good.
Yeah. I like the demon making out with the bishop.
Oh,
yeah. Specifically, he's like, "I'll give you a kiss, sir."
Yeah,
it's perfect for the tone of this thing.
Yeah, it's good shit.
Yeah, I don't
good
like
shit.
From reading about the script of it. Like, I don't think it changed too much since like his like whenever he finalized it with Igarashi. Like, I don't think it changed that much. Like, it's sort of weird that weird. Like,
I don't have any way of knowing, but yeah.
That weird, like, goat fucking scene was, like, on the internet 10 years ago. Like, like, he had posted that on his, like, production blog. Like, I don't know if people realize just, like, how long this was in production for, but it has been since, like, 2004 or something.
Well, it seemed kind of preoccupied with not doing the fan service thing. To the point where the music is actually not very good, because that's kind of the bad thing about it, is that the music isn't very good. It's just kind of generic. It feels like placeholder stuff. There's not a whiff of any of the classic Castlevania. No bloody tears, no vampire killer,
I bet somebody
nothing.
Will do an edit of the show to Castlevania 3 music.
For about 10 seconds before the copyright strike. But yeah.
They'll do it. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the one regret, is that I interviewed the producer and forgot to ask about the music. I should have done that. But next time I interview him, I'll do that.
hopefully in the second season, they'll throw some of it in there. Like,
yeah,
I think it's...
You know, I'm fine with there not being a turkey scene. Like, I'm cool with not being... It's fine. You know, I'm okay with that Dracula doesn't say, "What is a man?" You know, like, there's none of that. It's fine. You're taking it seriously. It's got its own jokes. The jokes are not references. That's fine.
The joke is...
Well, they did have the scene where he's like, "Why do these candles work without flames?" or something like that. Like, they had a little bit in there. Like a slight touch.
I bet there's a turkey thing in the last day. I bet there's some kind of a turkey thing in the last date.
Yeah.
I'm going to start a pool, turkey joke or no turkey joke.
I think there will be one. I don't think it will be
in the final eight episodes of Castlevania.
I'm going to bet there's going to be a turkey that they eat, but it's not going to be in a wall or anything.
There's not going to be a wall.
No, but there's going to be a 5-minute scene where he's like, "Did someone just cook this and leave it here?" And like, they just overextend it. Like, yeah.
No.
No. Or they'll have... There'll be a whole episode just about the guy whose job it is to make the turkey dinners and then deliver them to the wall.
It opens on like
that could be a light novel. That could be a light novel.
It's me
from
Mr.
the POV
Waltigan.
Of Dracula's turkey chef.
Right,
I would watch that shit. Make that a Netflix original movie.
I'm a chef, but I'm cooking turkeys for nobody and leaving them in Dracula's castle.
That's like the cover of the book. Just a wall of text and like a sexy girl behind it. Okay. Hey, speaking of that, light novels, we should talk about the summer 2017 anime season.
Oh, okay.
No, don't do that. It's not
it's
all
a bit
bad.
Weak. It's a
so,
bit weak.
So it's a little weak.
I've not seen anything, so I guess it's your guys' job to sell me on something or nothing.
Well, I mean, it's not my job to sell you on nothing. I don't work for an anime company. I work for Anime News Network. It's our job to be honest with you. let's talk about summer 2017. I have only watched about half a dozen premieres, but I had a lot to say about those premieres. Mm-hmm. So why don't I run through what I've seen, and then you can give us some other highlights.
Okay.
Okay? Is okay. that
all
right?
Yeah, I think you might hit all of the things, but, you know.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about them. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I watched was also the best. No. Well, sure. There's two best things that I watched. The first one was Made in Abyss, which I didn't really know what to expect other than, like, people had been laughing about the manga being kind of gross and, like, a little underage kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
The show, it pretty much eschews a lot of that. Like, there's a hint of it in there, but it's about these little kids who live on the precipice of this giant bottomless abyss that there's ancient civilization stuff down there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little girl, and her mom is one of the famous people who got to the bottom, not got to the bottom, but went very far down in this thing and died while the little girl was still very young, and sent back up a letter saying that indicated to the little girl, like, find me at the bottom of the abyss. Or that's how she's interpreting what she found.
Mm-hmm.
So she also finds this other little boy who she thinks is a robot because he's covered in kind of ancient mechanics.
Yeah.
And who doesn't have any memory of where he came from or anything. And she's going to go into the abyss to find, I guess, her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is like, that's sort of a basic plot outline. I watched the first three episodes, and I thought it was great. Like, the attention to detail is really, it's gorgeous. I thought it looked, now, I've been playing a lot of old PlayStation games lately, so I'm a little biased on this front, but I found a lot of other people had that reaction to it, too, where it really feels like the first couple hours of a PlayStation RPG, uh-huh. where, like, you're in the beginning, it's got a cool premise and some nice sprite graphics, and you're in this little town, and you're getting your equipment, and there's a, you know, the levels of the abyss and everything. I just half expected it to change to an isometric 3D view with, like, 2D sprites on it, just, like, scaling around and, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me. And they nailed that so hard. And it was really... I find the show pretty fascinating. I'm excited to watch the rest of it. What did you think?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, well, given what I know of the manga, but, like, it really eschews anything that was creepy from the manga. Like, you can kind of tell if you turn your head sideways and go, I want, if this was framed a bit differently, then it might be creepy. But, like, in context of the show, if that was all you were watching, it's not really creepy at all.
Yeah.
It just seems like kids, you know, being kids.
Yeah, there's a few jokes in there and stuff that are like, eh, but, it, that, you know, it's...
Right.
The but, tone of the show just doesn't lend itself to that kind of reading, so, you know, doesn't seem like it's an issue.
Right.
But yeah, that's probably... I'm definitely going to be keeping up with it. It was really compelling.
Yeah.
Glad to hear you liked it, too.
Yeah, the art design is really, really... It feels like a fully fleshed-out world. It's not just like, oh, a premise, and here's our anime characters, or here's our, you know, sort of stock characters. It feels like he's fully thought out, like... how this hole works, like this big hole in the earth, how this hole works, how society works around it, and all the backgrounds and the like the map and everything is really elaborate and thought out. So
yeah,
it's neat.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. It reminds me of when I was a kid sitting there drawing big maps of here's a dungeon and here's the little creatures and over here is little traps and I'm going to plan out this giant elaborate dungeon thing for my Dungeons & Dragons guys to go through. And like it just felt like he really thought it out and like really plotted. It's cool. Really cool stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing more. Hopefully it doesn't just peter out or whatever.
Yeah.
So the next thing I watched was a show called Princess Principal.
Wow.
And my notes here just say, nope. And that was pretty much my reaction to it. So it's steampunk little girl secret agents in the middle of fantasy, extremely complicated fantasy war.
Yeah,
it's alternate like history
they
thing.
They combined the Victorian era and World War One era. So they combined this like Victorian era fashion and then like World War One pseudo steampunk future technology stuff. And it's like in a world where Britain invented an anti-gravity machine, and so now they've like conquered the world, and now it's like Britain versus anti-Britain or whatever on the other side of a wall, and
it's the Code Geass guys.
It's guy singular. So there's two Code Geass guys. The guys responsible for creating Code Geass together, and Guilty Crown. Guilty Crown didn't go so well. They went their separate ways, and that's not necessarily the reason. It's just that they have worked separately since then. Hiroyuki Yoshino is one of them, and he's not the one we're talking about. And Ichiro Kuchi is the other one. Ichiro Kuchi is responsible for Valvrave the Liberator, Cabinary of the Iron Fortress. Specifically, I think... So Cabinary, I think a lot of it was written by Araki, because you just can kind of tell. But the stuff that Okuchi handled is pretty obvious. The stuff about, like, not living up to your dad's legacy or whatever, the
right.
stuff of Biba... And his particular fetish, which is sort of youngish looking girls that kick a lot of ass, you know, it's familiar. And so I like Ichiro Okuchi's.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't care.
I like Ichiro Okuchi's writing when it's bad, and it just wasn't bad enough in Princess Principal. It was very serious. It doesn't get silly. Like Valvrave is great because it gets so stupid. It is really
body
swapping vampires that drive robots on a colony ship full of kids, so it's like Lord of the Flies plus body switching vampire robots. That's Valvrave the Liberator, and it's great. It's
that hilarious. Old hat.
It's
that
crazy.
Old genre.
And but this is very. Yeah, this is like we're gonna detail out the history of this area, and we're gonna like explain how these girls do their espionage and stuff like that. And it's really serious, except for the obvious like fan service, as in all the spies are. Like young women who like flash their tits in order to get secrets out of people and stuff like that. And it's it's too it takes itself so seriously that I can't watch it for fun. I was like, oh, never mind. I thought maybe this would be a good hate watch.
But yeah, like, it seems fine.
It's okay.
And it seems like people are enjoying it, and that's totally cool. It's just, it just wasn't my kind of thing. Like, that's just not my kind of thing. Like, super serious. Here's I'm going to drop you into the middle of my complex alt history. Yeah. And here's 10 girls, and they're all taking themselves like, really serious.
They have, like, dark pasts, and they're super trained as spies and stuff like that. And it's like, that's not fun.
Yeah, it's not fun. So, you know. And I guess I'm kind of looking for fun right now. So the next thing I watched was the other thing that I really liked, which was Restaurant to Another World, which is getting, I feel like, sort of mixed notices. Some people like it, some people don't.
I don't like
it. You don't like it.
I don't like it.
I liked it a lot. I only watched the first two, and admittedly, the first half of the first episode made me go. But for the viewers at home, I went. Anyway, it was after that. Once it kind of gets into the actual story, quote unquote, I was pretty taken with it. I thought it was very nice. I got a very Yashke feeling from it. It's clever little stories. The concept is there's a restaurant that has a door that randomly opens in this fantasy world.
It's multiple fantasy worlds.
So Dungeons & Dragons characters eat at a modern restaurant, and they have a portal into the back. That's it. And each character has their own story and their own reason for coming there. And the second episode, I feel like, really brought it home. The guy who runs it hires somebody from the fantasy world to help him run it and manage the fantasy world customers. And then they just sort of handle each one as they come in the door, and each one has kind of a heartwarming message or a nice little life lesson or something like that. I just found it very relaxing, and the concepts were really cute. It was really clever. I thought the second episode was heartwarming. Like, I thought it was touching. I didn't watch 3 and 4 yet. But I'm going to get to them, and I really thought it was a quality. It reminded, like, it's not like something to get really excited about or tell, be like, oh, you got to watch it, but it's nice. It's a nice little show. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
You did. Why didn't you like it?
Well, I mean, like, you're right in that it's relaxing, but even with my Yashike stuff, I feel like I want it to be like Flying Witch is a really good example. Flying Witch is really relaxing, Yashike, and that's, like, sort of all it's trying to be, but it's interesting. There's moments that made me go, oh. And this is, like, the food they're serving is, like, it's not special. It's, like, the most standard.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It's standard modern-day Japanese food, which is amazing to fantasy world people.
Because they zoom in on it.
Yeah. Well, they treat it as if it's food porn, and it's, like, this is a basic dish you can get anywhere. So it's, like, somebody eating at a Denny's, and they're like, from the middle. It's somebody from the Middle Ages eating at a Denny's. If that tickles you, like, watching a bunch of people from fantasy Middle Ages, sometimes it's monster people and stuff like that come in, but, like, and they're like, what is this, a scrambled egg? Like, they're, like, freaking out over that.
Fried shrimp,
oh my god. And it's like, meh. But, like, I don't know, like, that's charming at first, but the story every time is just, the food is that, and the people that come from a fantasy world are, like, an NPC. Like, there's nothing unique, there's not, like, this person has a creative story. So in the newest episode, there's an elf that comes in, and elves are, like, natural vegans. Like, they can't eat anything.
Oh, okay.
They're natural vegans. And so she tries to...
All right, I'm into it.
Right. Well, I mean, like, to me, that's not that original. I'm just like, oh, like...
You're too hard to please.
But it's 12 minutes of, like, this elf is a vegan, and she comes in and discovers tofu.
You're supposed to be, like... you're not into it, you're not into it.
Exactly.
Like, that's it.
It's not unique enough. Like, Flying Witch had a bunch of weird, unique, like, takes on, like, what would it be like to live as a witch in modern-day Japan.
But the second... I thought they were pretty unique. Like, the little story was unique. The way it connected to the restaurant was unique.
Yes, I don't know. It's just I just don't think it's that... It's special enough. It's just very, like, I don't know, basic, wrote. But, like,
it's a good show.
Anyway, the elf discovers tofu, and she's like, oh my god, tofu! And then, like, inspires... But that's cute for 5 minutes. Here's the thing. That would be really great for 4 minutes, and then there's another 4 minutes with another thing. But it's 12 minutes of this elf is vegan, discovers tofu, leaves. It's just not enough, so I don't care for it. It's not bad, I just don't care for it. I'm like, okay, this is...
I bet you I'm going to get to this vegan elf and be like, this is so boring.
No, this is low-level Yashike. I want high-level Yashike, is all I'm saying.
What's high-level Yashike?
A Flying Witch.
I thought Flying Witch was boring.
Okay.
This is interesting. It's okay. Almost like the stuff is completely subjective. Yeah. Anyway. Well, anyway, you should not listen to Jacob and instead watch Restaurant to Another World. Here's a thing that you told me to watch the dumbest fucking shit. Love and Lies.
It's
holy
so stupid.
Shit, what a dumb
Yay.
Show.
So that's the show that I think weirdly for
what if the government arranged your marriage?
Well, accidentally, I'm actually more stoked about this than I think most any other show this season because it just got dumber and dumber with every episode.
Well, don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it, but it gets dumber.
Explain the plot.
So the plot is in order to combat the lowering birth rate in Japan, which this is not the cause of the birth rate decline, but whatever. This is a dumb story, so they come up with a dumb solution. They come up with this perfect computer algorithm for who your ideal mate would be. And
oh,
they
yeah.
pair you, and they pair you up with that person when you turn 16. So arranged marriages that start at 16. And this guy has like a crush on this girl that he's been crushing on since he was little, and he's like, tomorrow's my 16th birthday or whatever, I've gotta tell her before I get set up with somebody else. And so he confesses to her, and she's like, I like you too, and they're like making out or whatever. They have a scene where they, here's the thing, it's smutty, so it's not just dumb like rom-com, you know, like ague, like. It is. They're immediately making out, and there's like a spit string.
There's a spit string, and there's like, close-ups on her cleavage and shit.
Exactly.
Like,
it's like,
very
oh, this is
fancy.
Smutty. Yeah. And so they're like making out, and they're like, you know, I only want to be with you. And then so he gets his notice, and he's betrothed to another girl. And this girl,
can you believe
of,
it?
Well, here's the thing. When this girl, I don't think this is a spoiler. Like, this is just the second episode. This is just more of the premise that you need to know in order to give a shit. That girl, instead of being like, you know, don't hang out with her. She gets like a vicarious, she's really sheltered, and she was sick when she was little, and she's really sheltered now, and so she doesn't really think of this stuff in terms of like social mores. She's just trying to feed her growing libido, and she's like, you guys should like really start going out with each other though. Like, I'm totally fine with it. I'm your wife, so I'm your future wife, so you guys should like kiss like in front of me and I'll watch you. And like, it's crazy, and it gets weirder because more people are crushing on bland protagonist Kun, and they're not all women, and like it just gets.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is he bisexual?
No,
of course just, not.
His best friend has a huge crush on him, and he's a boy, and they haven't addressed how the arranged. I assume the arranged marriages mean no gayness, but like so that's also a problem. And anyway,
a fly
it just gets.
In here.
I don't know. There's a fly. I don't have a fly swatter, so I can't do anything about it. But anyway, it just gets more and more smutty and dumb. And so like, basically, if you've seen Scum's Wish, which I love, I think Scum's Wish is great. It's just imagine what if the protagonist of Scum's Wish was a boy instead of a girl. So it's already made it a little worse, but that's okay. And was the stupidest thing on the planet. And you have Love and Lies.
The main so. Character is the cringiest fucking dipshit. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe he's not the cringiest fucking dipshit.
He's just really bland. He's dumb.
No, it's actively cringo. Like,
yeah.
They spend all this time on, like, I gave you my eraser, and he spends his entire life pining for her over this one stupid moment, and you're like, you're dumb, this yeah. is gonna, that
well,
is not.
Well, she's pining for him for the same
yeah,
reason.
Yeah, I know, which is like, oh, this is written by, okay. Yeah, like, it's just, ugh. So, like, I laughed a lot, so I'll probably watch more of it, because it's really entertainingly stupid.
Right.
But it's really dumb.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like girl coercing her betrothed to make out with the girl that he actually loves, and he doesn't know how to feel about this, and then also his best friend is gay and in love with him, and the next episode, they're all going to go on a camping trip together under the enforcement of his wife, who's like, we all need to be friends if this is going to work out, and it's like, oh my god. This is so stupid.
So is this self-aware dumb, or just...
No. If it was self-aware dumb, it would ruin it. It is completely sincere.
Nope.
It's completely
not self-aware
sincere.
In the slightest. Okay,
I'm really happy about it.
It's a. I should get back to it. however, I just want to point out that Love and Lies is the entertaining and fun kind of stupid. Like mm-hmm. we're all being a little hyperbolic here, but like it's the fun kind of like
it's fun dumb.
Yeah, it's fun, bubbly, whatever. Mm-hmm. Isekai smartphone.
Oh.
Trapped in another world with my smartphone. Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen a lot of shitty isekai shows. Everyone's seen a lot
How
of...
We all?
This is an anime podcast. Everyone listening to it and watching it has probably seen their fair share of shitty isekai shows. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to go on the record. Maybe don't hold me to this because I'm sure I'm forgetting something that's maybe worse. Mm-hmm. But this seems like the laziest isekai show I've ever seen.
I wouldn't say worst. I would say laziest.
Laziest.
Yep.
It opens with the main character, Kun... just hashing out the premise with a god who's obviously the writer, who just is like, sure, hey, whatever.
We didn't even see him die. He's like, oh no, you died, but you weren't supposed to die, so I'm gonna reincarnate you. The opening scene is him already being dead and sitting in heaven.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a shit that he died, and God's like, I'm gonna send you to another world because you weren't supposed to die today.
Yeah,
he's like,
I'm just,
okay.
And literally they're just like, oh, you want special powers? Here you go. Oh, you want a smart, and I'm gonna make it so you have your smartphone. Oh, you won't be able to do this or that, but you, like, literally just like, if I were to sit down and be like, okay, what's my isekai premise? Well, he goes to another world. Well, what's the gimmick, though? I guess he has his phone with him.
Yeah.
Okay, but how does it work, though? All right, it works this way. Okay, does he have, like, combat? Yeah, he's got, like, combat, so he doesn't get beat up or anything. Okay, all right, you know, like, fine, let's make it. Let's do it. The show sets itself up that way. Mm-hmm. In the first episode, he meets, like, two love interests at once, mm-hmm. who then take him to the quest giver, who literally fucking gives him kill five wolves and bring back their horns.
Yeah.
Like at the like the World of Warcraft treadmill quest that everyone fucking makes fun of in the MMOs, go kill these wolves and bring back the horns you collect from them.
And he uses a smartphone to, like,
he does that.
Yeah, and he, like, uses his smartphone as a map. Like, it's not even anything creative. It's just,
and they fucking show you him going and killing five wolves and bringing back the horns,
and they're like,
to collect some copper pieces.
And they're like, here's the cool world building of this world. Everybody has an elemental magic power. There's like eight possible, and you can have a magic affinity. But we've never known anybody that has more than like two, and he has affinity with every
type of
magic.
It just made me so mad. I was like, you're wasting my life and yours. Like,
he can do every kind of magic at their max capacity automatically.
Automatic, yep.
It's
whatever.
Like,
so whatever. He's,
it's the laziest
Captain
thing.
Planet, and
yeah. It's just, I couldn't believe it. And unless it's like commentary on isekai being like writing themselves.
That would be funny.
Which it ain't.
No.
Which it will not turn into. I was just, anyway,
I can't. And the funny thing is, people are like, actually, so it's a web novel. It's not necessarily a light novel. It was eventually published, but it was on one of those sites where everybody just, it's a fanfiction.net site, basically, where people write their isekai stuff. And it was written on his phone.
Yeah, sure.
It's written on his phone, so that means, like, he's
look,
not
good
edited,
for him, man.
You know?
You got a publishing contract. He's probably made a decent amount of money.
I
good,
know, but
good
it's the,
for him.
It is the
I'm
most,
just telling you, that show is dumber than a bag of dumb shows.
It's,
like, it
it's
is,
just so
you
lazy.
Could have a bag full of dumb shows, and that would be less dumb than this show.
It is the laziest premise. Like, I usually they, like, add some kind of quirk, but this is just like, nope, no quirks. This is the most rote thing I can come up with. Here you go.
So they don't even do anything where, like, the cell phone is like magical technology or something, and
no.
they're like wild by
no
it.
No one really seems to notice that he's like, and all he does with the phone is like use Google Maps.
Google Maps and takes pictures of things. It's
takes
like,
pictures
wow,
and Google Maps.
The wonder, the magic, and everybody's like, "What a magical item this is!"
Yeah. Oh, like, you have a magical item there. Yes, I do. And he seems bored.
Yes.
He seems like, oh, well, I guess I better do this then.
He did
like,
not
he's
care
been
that
in
died.
It. Like, this, the guy acts like he's been, not like ReZero, where he's watched a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. The main character is just blasé about everything, like he's been in a show like this before.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, yeah, I know, I remember doing this. Okay, then, all right, then this is probably going to happen next.
Like, ReZero
but not
was
in,
enjoyable.
Like, a fun, like, meta way, yeah. in just like a no one cares.
ReZero was enjoyable because of his enthusiasm. It was like, oh my god, my otaku dream came true. Like, he's really happy about it. This guy just like feels, he just has no personality, no emotional response to anything. He's just like, I'm
what,
in another
yeah,
world with
man,
my smartphone.
I just didn't. Yeah, yeah. He's in
the
another
guy in
world
ReZero,
with his smartphone.
Like, he kind of knows he's a schmuck, and he like revels in it, and he's like excited about all this shit.
Right.
That's what but that's the thing. Like ReZero, like they already made a good version of this.
Right.
They already made that. It's called ReZero.
Better, I would say.
I like ReZero.
Okay.
Is that
better,
coming
yeah,
back?
I don't know. The middle of ReZero.
Soon?
I don't know
really
when they announce.
Not this year. Next year, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully next year. That'll be good if that comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll be that and Titan in the same season.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be great.
I hope if they when they do more ReZero, like the pacing's better because like the middle where they're in that mansion or whatever forever.
I hated it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty.
I hated that part.
I just, whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah. You're right. You're right. That's what I watched. I guess I only really watched four things. I tried to watch A Centaur's Life, but it kind of threw me because the pacing was really weird, the way it was constructed. Everyone's talking about how kind of weirdly constructed that show is.
It's a co-production. It's a Chinese co-production, Howling Nerves Animation, which means it's partially animated in China and Korea and Japan. But, like, The problem is the way it is directed and storyboarded is like, so usually we see these Chinese co-productions and they're storyboarded and edited and directed really weird. Like, I'm not sure you, like, maybe you either didn't go to school for this or you didn't, like, I don't know, talk to somebody who, like, I don't know, they just, they don't seem to understand some of the fundamentals of how to set up a scene and pay it off, that, which even in mediocre anime, like, the story's garbage, but it's directed like, okay, there's a build and there's a swell and a fall into it. It feels right. You're not distracted by how the construction's weird. Usually when you see Chinese co-pros, like, the story is bad, so we focus on that first, so we don't really talk about the construction. Centaur's Life, like, the material is good and it's interesting, but the construction is still bad, so it's confusing. It's like, oh, I want to like this, but, like, where did this scene come from? Why are we here now instead of, like, I don't understand how we jumped from here from the previous scene. It's stuff like that.
Yeah,
where it's just like, this is off.
Yeah,
I understand what's going on, but it has no emotional resonance, and I don't know what the thematic point is, but they clearly have one, because it's a very political show, but you just can't tell where it's going.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what even the politics are. There's a good discussion on that.
Yeah,
this week in anime. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the interesting thing about the show, is like, what is it saying about all this stuff? But I'm just going to read the episode reviews that we have and keep up. I don't think I'm going
to
watch it.
Yeah, Gabriella is doing her best to explain what she thinks the show is saying.
What she thinks the show is saying. Well, the manga apparently gets pretty... Like, somebody in our forums was talking about what happens in the manga, like,
I read
10 volumes out, and it's, like, direct parallels to, like, the U.S.
volume.
Meddling in other countries. Yeah. Like, it's like, all right. Okay.
Yeah, I read the first volume, and it was like, oh, okay, this is absolutely just 100% political.
Yeah.
But, you know, the show is just kind of sort of half in and half outing with that, and
yeah,
it's a little confusing.
So, is there anything else this season that you might recommend?
So this is weird. This is a short, but it's called Siridori Children.
Right. Everyone's talking about this. Like, this is apparently the good show.
Yeah, so it's only 12 minutes at a time, but it's really fun. It is a story of, like, it's like basically, like, I don't know, six or seven. I'm not sure we've even gone through all of them, but it's six or seven different couples, like, in high school, like, brand new couples getting together, and they're all completely different in terms of their dynamics and the personalities, and none of them are stereotypes. They're all kind of weird eccentrics, but none of them are stereotypes, and the dynamics between each relationship is really fun. Like, so we have childhood friends that, like, let's date, okay, and then, like, a week later, you haven't even kissed me yet. Oh, I thought you were joking. Are we actually dating? I'm sorry. And then, like, then they have a thing, and then, like, they try to have sex, and it doesn't work. His mom keeps bursting in on him and stuff like that. But it's stuff like that where it's just really relatable. It's very hashtag relatable. You know, if you know weirdos who like, in their first relationship, this sort of weird stuff happened to them, it feels right. Like, it's not anime stereotypes. It feels like that. And what's another one? It's a very sheepish boy who's, like, there's a girl who is, like, she doesn't want to go out with him until, like, she's sure that he actually notices or cares about her because he's so sheepish. But for him, he feels like she's too aggressive, and so she'll be, like, make a dirty joke around him, or she'll, like, say, so, do you want to go out with me? And he's like, I don't know, she pushes him around, and it's really funny. And then the last one is the weirdest, this is the most problematic one, like...
Problematic.
It is. Well, it's a little problematic, but
sound the alarm.
But it's really funny. Like, so I think you can get away with this because it's not playing on stereotypes. It's just bizarre, and so it's funny. But there's a Yankee girl, and the guy who wants to ask her out is, like, an extremely nerdy, just says everything that's on his mind guy. And so he's like, I just wanted you to know that I've never fallen... I don't know what it means to love, and I don't know that I've ever fallen in love with anybody before, but I think I might have feelings with you, and do you think that might be okay? Also, you're not supposed to smoke outside, so if you could put out that cigarette, I'm trying to have a serious conversation. But, like, it's like that, and so it's really funny, but also he's really forceful. So he's like, you know, if he wants to kiss her, he just, like, pushes her up against a wall and kisses her, and she's like, what the fuck, you know? But, so, yeah, it's problematic because he's very forceful, but it's...
Oh, I see.
But it's really funny, so I don't know. But yeah, that's the show. It just has a bunch of different...
We should probably start
couples.
Reviewing that on the site.
Yeah, I mean, we need somebody to, like, cover it full. It really is too short and choppy to really have, like, episode reviews.
We gotta have some this season.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Netflix took all the good stuff.
But it's really good.
We got a question about that. We should get to the Twitter questions, I think.
Okay, can I mention one more show?
Oh, sure, go ahead.
The other thing, this is actually very similar to this, is a show that, based on the premise, I did not have any hope for and didn't think it was going to be any good, but the first couple episodes have been really good. It's called Gamers.
I thought you were going to say NTR.
No, that is trash, but it's entertaining trash from what I understand. I'm a little behind on that one, but, like...
I mean, like, there's a lot of pornography called that. Like,
yeah.
Just hentai OVAs called the same thing. Mm-hmm. So... Right. Like, it's a genre of porn.
Yeah.
So
the premise of this, the premise of that one, I think, is like two guys going out with two girls, and one of them is an abusive couple, and so the girl takes it out by seducing the other girl.
Whatever.
It's porn. Anyway. So Gamers is really good. I thought it was going to be a standard harem thing of, like, Milquetoast Boy enters the gaming club and here's all the girls and they have their wacky anime girl personality. I thought that was going to be it. But it's not that, like, even a little bit. So instead it's Milquetoast Boy gets asked to join the gaming club. The gaming club is super competitive and they're, like, in this to win and they, like, specialize and they organize to go to tournaments and stuff like this. And he's like, not for me. I'm a casual gamer. No. But the girl who invited him, like, has a crush on him. So she's just like... She's heartbroken by this, and she spends the rest of the show stalking him, and it just shows, not in a creepy way, but, like, it's not creepy. She doesn't infringe on his boundaries. She's just sort of pining. But she's a very strong personality, so it's funny. It's not, like, sad or anything. And so instead he becomes friend with this other guy who's, like, a closet gamer. Like, he was like, once I enter high school, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to make friends with real, like, with cool people. But the cool people are really boring, and they're shitty, and they, like, neg him and stuff like that for being, you know. And so he finds instead that, like, he reconnects with his roots as a gamer, and the girl that he's been dating this whole time also, like, likes him for who he is as a nerd. And she's really realistically portrayed, too. And so instead of a harem, it's just, like, a bunch of different characters, like, talking about how they relate to being a gamer and playing video games and what it means to them. Like, do you like to play it casually? Do you feel like it cuts people off from you? Or do you feel like it's a social thing, etc.? And they're in different, you know, like, we don't see the gaming club for, like, 2 minutes. But the rest of it is just, like, their school life, like... mistakenly who is dating who, you know, kind of a mix-up, but it's like two or three guys and three or four girls instead of being a harem, and it's just, I don't know, it's just really funny, and the gags are good and the animation is good a lot of the time, and the gaming references are very specific. Like, they go to the arena and they play that Persona 4 fighting game, and they describe exactly, like, with real quick, it's real quick jokes, so it's not boring at all, but they describe exactly why, like, the guy loses when he's just hammering buttons. As opposed to what you should do if you want to win, that sort of thing. But, and then they reference, like, old games and mobile games. And I don't know. It's really good. I thought it was one of the most entertaining, like, slice of lifey type things I've seen in a long time. So
cool.
Definitely
that sounds good. Gamers. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I'll watch
so,
it.
So are the games actually real games? Or, like, they're fake games in there, too? Or, like...
Both. They're real games when I think that they were able to get the license
when there's promotional consideration, there's a real game. And if they just need something as an analog, I'm sure they...
Yeah, but the fake games, it's very obvious exactly what... Like, they change a letter. It's very obvious exactly what
what's
it is.
Like what?
Like what they're going for?
Is it like Final Fantasy or something? Like,
yeah, stuff like that. Or like a mobile game that's obviously like something like Terra Battle or whatever.
Like Tora Battle or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They change like a letter, but it's very clear what everything is. And also, like, the settings.
Someone
are also,
in the chat says Blaze Blue.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And but like the settings
it
are also
like
really
Arc sponsored. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The settings are also really, having been to Japan recently, it's like, oh, this is this exact building, like where you go up to the fourth floor specifically, and there's a bunch
Nakano,
of.
Is it Nakano Broadway, the arcade up there?
Yes, and there's an ashtray and a bunch of, like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I recognize these locations.
That we were just there.
Yeah.
We walked past that arcade, like, in a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. And my favorite was...
Sort of like Genshin,
I went up there
maybe?
And played Street Fighter Alpha 3? Mm-hmm. Street Fighter 4, like, years ago. Anyway, go on.
My favorite is there's a shot when they're in the gaming club, there's a guy who's really serious about FPSs, and he's this, like, hardcore, like... don't fuck up my record of whatever kills, and so our main character is playing around with it, and it just shows the shot of his little crouching guy, like, going up, like, they're camping out in some sort of walled enclave or something like that to avoid the enemy team. He crawls up on top of a sedan of a car and, like, jumps on top of the sedan in order to see if there's anybody over the other side, and just and falls off. And it's just a really funny, like, setup and payoff, like, joke. I don't know. So definitely check that out. Like, it's not like a let's just slap the gaming club on top of a generic slice of life thing. Like, it's very funny. It's good.
Is it like Genshiken or?
Yeah, it's a little, like, there aren't really negative jokes about, like, weird, awkward. Everybody's very pretty and. You know, there aren't, like, weird, awkward nerd characters. Everybody's, like, anime pretty.
Positive portrayals.
It's positive portrayals, yeah. But it's cool. But it's accurate in its references and talking about gaming culture and stuff like that.
Good. So, that sounds great. I'll definitely watch that.
So of all these things you guys talked about, if you have time for one of them, what one would you go for, both of you?
Made in Abyss, but I'm going to watch this thing. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say Made in Abyss, just to see what happens. Like, I want to know what's in the hole. You know, I want to know what's in the hole, so.
Yeah. Yup. Okay, let's do Twitter questions.
Yes.
We got a bunch of them. Speaking of which, Yellow Redfield asks, will we see more Kakegurui-style reviews? for shows that aren't officially streaming outside of Japan yet. Okay, so there's the two big shows this summer are Fate Apocrypha and Kakegurui, which is sort of a psychosexual gambling thing. I have the first volume of the manga. I think Yen Press or Kodansha put it out. It's on my table.
I've seen the PVs and I've read the first volume of the manga, which we have on the shelf over there. But like, it's kind of prison school-y. It's so
well they can't watch it. There's a review on the site.
Yeah.
Nobody can watch it yet, so there's a review on the site, and you can read the manga. We have a Tokyo correspondent who's watching this stuff on TV in Japan and reviewing it for it. We're not going to review the whole show, because doing the whole like preview is okay, but I feel like reviewing the entire thing and talking about the whole story all the way through before it's available, really, in English is kind of shitty, so...
We'll just wait till Netflix.
We did that and Fate Apocrypha, but when Netflix puts those up, we'll have full reviews and a discussion and everything. But that's kind of a bummer that, you know, they took those shows. So, yeah, you can read those reviews on the site. I don't know that we're going to do a lot more of them. We might do, like, a 3-6. People read the hell out of it. So, like, we kind of have an incentive to do more. But, you know, I don't know. It puts us in a very interesting situation where we have someone in Japan who can just review the shows for us. But we don't really know what the audience... If you have an opinion on this and you listen to AnCast, send me an email, zach@animenewsnetwork.com. Hit me up on Twitter, AnnZach. Let me know what you think. So let's see here. There's somebody in the chat who brought up, aren't we talking about Welcome to the Ballroom? Well, I guess we're not. I saw it at Anime Expo. I saw the first two episodes at Anime Expo and gave it a good review, and I liked it. But I have to be honest in that I haven't been compelled to watch too much more. I read the manga, the first volume of the manga, second volume of the manga, I think, and the show's pretty close. It's a well-constructed show, but I have to, like, the comments on it are not very... People don't seem very big on it.
Right. My guess, if I had to say... So I think there's two issues. One of them I don't give a shit about, and the other one I kind of understand. So some people have a... I don't know why they didn't have response... I guess they didn't have this response to Haikyuu, because the Haikyuu guys are smaller. They're teenage-ish, and they don't have the giraffe necks. But people are responding really negatively to the giraffe necks, which, whatever.
It's so. Like a meme, though.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a meme. It's a meme people, to complain about it.
Yeah, but there are people who genuinely like, ugh, I think the show is ugly. Like, there are a lot of people who watch anime because they want the characters
it's pretty,
to be
yeah.
physically attractive. And if they're like, I don't find this physically attractive, then they don't watch. It's shitty, but that's what it is. However, there's another thing that I kind of agree with and is kind of keeping me from being enthusiastic about Welcome to the Ballroom. Like, I love Haikyuu. Like, it's great, especially as of the third season. The third season of Haikyuu is, this, like, it's chef's kiss. It's really good. However, Welcome to the Ballroom, it just... The animation is really good, but the thing that Haikyuu had was this, like, the storyboarding and the editing and stuff like that. We're just talking about with A Centaur's Life. It's not just having really good cuts of animation. You have to kind of know how to string them together with the music and the editing and stuff like that to give it punch, to give it life. And Haikyuu is just extremely alive at all times, even when it's just people standing around talking, which it is a lot of the time, like monologuing in order to save on animation. Like, there's a real, like, drive to Haikyuu. Ballroom, like, there's these really good cuts of animation, and then there's silence when people are just talking.
Yeah, I've noticed that. There's a lot of silence.
And setups to jokes. Like, jokes are played with no music, and the setup and payoff to a joke, and some the jokes are a little bit mean because it's a shonen. Sometimes, you know, shonen has a little crass or mean jokes.
Yeah.
And that exists with no music and just sort of, like, happens... And, you know, the tonal problem where something's dramatic and then it's funny and then goes back to being dramatic. And that can be pulled off, but it's just not quite landing. I don't know. But I guess my problem with Ballroom, and I feel like a lot of people's problem with Ballroom, is, like, the energy of, like, being a strong, like, a strong-willed director with a perspective where you can, like, know exactly how to frame a shot and when to zoom in and when to, like, cut real hard and when to, like, let a scene sit. Like, that stuff seems lost. It feels like sort of just a panel-by-panel recreation with really good animation. Mm. And it's just kind of... flat. And I think that's maybe part of the problem. Like, it looks really good, but there's a life that's just kind of...
Maybe it'll pick up.
I hope so.
I
really hope so. But it's just like, I do feel like that gap there, where it's like, I want to be excited about this, but it's just not... I don't know, there's something...
The manga is so straightforward. Mm-hmm. It is just shonen tropes. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like, and it's perfectly fine executed, but I was laughing at how... The plot turns are like, yep. Mm-hmm. Like, it's comical how quickly they
and the
get to the
opening theme
too. Like, they get to the some of these shonen plot points, like entered into a tournament, unsure of his skills, right fucking away.
The opening theme is by Unison Square Garden, who I love. Like, Unison Square Garden are the best, but I don't... but even then, it's like, this is not a particularly good Unison Square Garden. Like, I just don't... I'm just so disappointed, because it's like, this is where it should be, and this is... It just doesn't really, you know...
I just
it doesn't seem like it's catching on. Sorry, Brady, go ahead.
Oh, I just remember seeing the preview with you and, I think, Gabbo, and I was just like, there's nothing... It doesn't really seem that evocative. Like, it seems like it would be more... I don't know. It doesn't have that, like, panache that something like Yuri on Ice had or something. It just seemed very, here it is, here's this, and it's not super evocative.
I almost want to, like, just as, like, an exercise, like, go back and, like, watch... Here's compare the first episode of Haikyuu to the first episode of Welcome to the Ballroom, like, side by side. Because, like, I remember seeing it. I remember at the time that some of our people in the this is just difference of opinion, but some of our people in the preview guide gave it, like, middling scores. It was, like, 3. And I was like, this is going to be huge. Like, I was really excited about it. I was like, that was so kinetic. Like, that was so strong for a sports anime opening, especially. Because I think at the time, like, that was also the first season of, like, Baby Steps. And it was really lame. And I was like, that first episode was great. And I feel like I want to compare it side by side to Welcome to the Ballroom, where it's just, like, the energy just...
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Customs, we got to get through these pretty quick, because you and I got to... We have an appointment to make that we got to try and get to.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So we got to get through these things. Customzaku asks, do you think the Netflix Death Note would have worked better as a full TV series? All right, so I was at the panel for Netflix Death Note.
You didn't.
I saw, like, 5 minutes of Netflix Death Note. Mm-hmm. Our friend and friend of the site who does some work for us, Deb Aoki, was there, and you can read her report from the premiere and what to expect from the movie on the site right now. She saw the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I asked her to, you know, no spoilers. And true to her word, it's not a very spoilery review, but it kind of gives you an idea of what to expect. And I'm very curious to see that movie now. It sounds like it is definitely set up to have a sequel. So they will do this in maybe theatrical episodes, like one episode, you know, Death Note 2, Death Note, whatever. But it sounds like it's a pretty significant change from the manga. I'm very curious to see it. I couldn't tell you. I haven't seen it myself yet. From what I saw in that panel, they released that clip. Like, immediately they released that clip where he meets Ryuk for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I thought the actor was doing some crazy cartoon, like, what? Like, really wacky, like...
I didn't think it was that wacky.
Disney Channel, like...
I did not think
not
it was
Disney
that
Channel.
Wacky.
That's okay, but...
He slaps himself and says, okay, you're dreaming, which is a cartoonish thing to do, but I didn't think the tone was cartoony.
And just, like, the desk gets pulled away, and he's, like, looking around, like, whoa, you know, like...
It's a bit silly.
Yeah, like, I wanted him to be, like, hiding behind a box, and then the box pulls away, and he goes like this, like, yeah, it's... I really want to see that movie. It's
me too.
August 25th. We'll have a full review. You're going to write the full review of that once it actually goes live. So
I'm extremely curious about L, because L is a character that is near and dear to my heart, and I've seen him done bad. I've already seen him done badly in the Japanese live action version. So I'm curious to see what this completely different reimagining of the character, like, if I still cotton to it, if I feel like it captures the spirit of it. Because obviously, in the details, it's not the same. But does it capture the spirit of that character? Like, I'm curious.
Yeah.
I love the Death Note manga. I like reading it, and this looks interesting. Like, it, other than that one little scene you mentioned, like, I remember being taken aback a little bit by that. Like, he's like, ugh! Like, other than that bit, like, it just looks kind of interesting. And I do kind of like what they did with Ryuk, and I like what's his face as
Willem Dafoe. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
he wasn't there.
Leaning,
he Skyped in.
Yeah, they are leaning heavily into him in the previews, obviously, but, like, I'm liking what I'm seeing with that, so, like, I'm curious about it. Like, I'm really excited to see it.
I want somebody specify, like, which live action. This is a key to thing to specify. When I said the sucky L in the Japanese live action version, the movie, that the L they got for that was fine. The light in the movies sucked. The J drama, which I watched, the L in that J drama sucked. It was awful. The light was actually really good. So maybe you just can't have both at once. So I don't know what happened there.
I don't know, but I just want to point out that during the Netflix Death Note panel, Willem Dafoe was obviously filming something or whatever and couldn't be there. But he Skyped in as Ryuk, and it was exactly as awkward as that sounds, because the connection, like, it was a little off, and they just had, like you see on our screen right now, Brady's little thing. They just had they had that with, and Willem Dafoe doing the voice, but he can't hear the prompts or anything. So he's just, like, kind of ad-libbing, like, get ready to see this clip of our movie. And you're like, all right.
Oh, love him.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Okay, he also wants to know, Custom Zaku, does it surprise you that viewer reactions toward Princess Principal seem to be trending more positive than negative? No, that doesn't surprise me that people like the show.
No.
It's just not for me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it objectively is too serious or whatever. It's just, I just wasn't drawn into it.
You don't understand.
I don't like steampunk really at all.
I wanted it to be bad. You don't understand. I wanted it to be bad, and it isn't.
And it might still get there. Yeah. You wanted it to be goofy. You wanted it to be goofy fine.
It's just perfectly fine, and it's not my aesthetic.
Perfectly fine. It wasn't good. It wasn't goofy and silly enough for you. Yeah. That's kind of more what we mean.
Yeah.
Anyway. Let's see. Danger wants to know, given the Fate franchise's unstoppable popularity, this question is a plant.
Nah, so
it reminds me of that
show.
Simpsons. How are you so popular? Do you guys think Ryogo Narita's Fate Strange Fake has a chance at an eventual adaptation? I don't know what that is.
That is Ryogo Narita, who is Bakano Durarara, wrote a Fate story. And
really?
It is exactly like a Narita thing, as in one of the masters is a dog that accidentally summons a servant. It's just a dog.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So, I've heard people loved it. They're like, oh, yeah, it stays true to the spirit of the story, but it's fun in his style. So, yeah, that would be great.
You'll probably get it at some point. If someone thinks that will sell copies here and they have access to the publisher, they will make it available to you.
Yeah, I need more Narita anime, because at the end of that Durarara thing, they had no energy left to finish animating that. And it was like, the story is good, but there's the animation is just like, we're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Or budget. But, like, the thing about Fate stuff is it's popular enough that, like, they're adapting everything. They're adapting, like, multiple routes of the main Fate thing.
There's a movie coming just for Heaven's Feel.
Just for Heaven's Feel.
Yeah, they're in Heaven's Feel, yeah. So, like, hopefully without all the really, really weird bad stuff from that route. But, like, like, it's Fate. They'll eventually get to it. Like, I'm sure they will. Like, either they'll translate it or they'll make an anime adaptation.
Someone will bring out the Fate visual novel at some point, and they'll make a lot of money.
They've been trying.
And they'll make a lot of money when they do.
I mean,
that could definitely, like, I'm surprised they don't just Kickstarter it. They could make probably $500,000 easy.
I don't think it's because they can't Kickstarter it. I think it's, like,
It's always right.
Type Moon. I think it's Type Moon's just, like, we want more money, probably.
Probably.
We want more money, and from what I understand, they are very, very picky about the translation.
No shit.
So, I have some inside baseball on that.
Oh!
And,
hang on.
What?
Well, we got to talk about Fate Extella if we're going to talk about Fate at all.
Please go ahead.
Because I started... Okay, so they sent me a copy of Fate Extella. It's funny because I started posting about it on Twitter. And people were like, did you buy that game? I was like, no. No, they sent it to me. Like, I was curious about it, but they sent me a copy of Fate Extella, which is the otakuiest... Like, I've watched a lot of Fate, okay? Mm-hmm. I've watched Fate Zero. I've watched Fate's Day Night. I've played a bit of the visual novel. Like, I know... Fate is an otaku-y thing.
Yeah.
This was next level. Like, you want to see how far they could take it with Fate.
This is... Your servant is just your waifu.
And she's like, oh, I didn't have time to decorate my bedroom, so it looks just like a love hotel. Put me in a wedding dress with a zipper that goes down to my fucking crotch.
Yeah.
And I'm going to run around and shoot things for you, master. And my villain is like a cat girl with huge tits.
You literally
tits.
Turn into a wedding ring on my finger.
Yeah, you turn into a wedding ring on... Yeah, it is... Wife
and she's
familiar.
An idol. So Elizabeth Bathory is one of the villains, and she's a cat girl idol.
Yeah, and
I
have absolutely no fucking idea how she's supposed to have anything in common with Elizabeth Bathory.
When you think of the Blood Countess, you think of a fucking idol.
Yeah, it's really... But I was laughing out loud. It's a Musou game, so if you know what those are like, you know what this is like. But wow, like, you want the full fucking otaku experience. It's on the Nintendo Switch right now.
Yeah.
Fate Extella, holy shit.
Like, before you even go out into battle, after you get the introductory conversation, you immediately get the opportunity to dress
you
her
go
up.
Right to the bedroom,
wanna,
and she's like, put some clothes on me.
If you
want to
get Emperor, if you want to get Emperor Nero's titties out, because that's who she is. She's Emperor Nero.
Yeah, she's supposed
to be.
The
one who fiddled
literally.
While Rome burned.
Yeah.
She's like, your titties are out.
Which I don't... Like, it had literally nothing at all to do with Nero.
Yeah.
So, well, this is the third in the series, this game.
It's a sequel to Fate Extra.
Extra CCC. Like,
and it's and Fate Extra was not as otaku porny. Like, this is like the fan service sequel to Fate Extra.
It's a Musou game, so they're just tie it together.
It's just a Musou game.
It's got some like cool designs, I think. I like Elizabeth Bathory's design. I think it's a cool design. I don't see how it's Elizabeth Bathory.
It has nothing to do with her. I don't even...
Yeah. But like, yeah, it's kind of neat. I've messed around with a little bit of it. It's pretty cool. I don't know. But you're right. It's like just complete otaku pandering.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's kind of fun.
If you get it on Switch, you get all the DLC built in. You can also get it on Steam.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
Yeah, it's on Steam. Steam, I think it's like $10 cheaper, but you don't get all the DLC.
Well, everything is more expensive on the Switch, as I noticed.
Yeah.
Games that should be like $15 or like $25. That's a great console. I bought one finally. I got one with Splatoon. It's really cool and fun. I'm really liking that thing.
I gotta send you my friend thingy. I want to get Disgaea 5 for Switch. I feel like that would be like a great portable game.
I bought Shovel Knight for it. Which was a good idea.
That is a good idea. But Disgaea 5 is like $60. I'm just
it
like,
is, and it, yeah, right?
I'm like, mm-hmm. I need this to be like 35 or 40 or something before I can put down money on this.
I bought like Mario Kart and Zelda for it. I bought Zelda again.
That's how good that game is. I've been playing it on Switch.
Yeah, that's how good that game is. Let's see. Okay, What's Your Name wants to know, do we have any way to stop Netflix's anime practices?
Nope.
Get used to it. That's the...
They have more money than God. You have nothing to do.
You can't do anything about the way... If Netflix doesn't want to... If that's the way they manage their content and it makes money for them and they can do things that they will. And it's... I'm not saying, like, don't tell them how you feel. Tell them how you feel. Mm-hmm. You should. But I'm saying that it's not... You shouldn't get your hopes up expecting that to change.
Mm-hmm.
They can stay in the business as long as they want, and they will do things the way that they want to because they're a giant, powerful corporation.
Right.
That can just wade in and do whatever they want. So it's... And you can complain about it, but the idea that we can do anything about it, that feels a little... Excuse me. Still dealing with a little bit of a cough. Those coughs linger for like a month afterward. You should tell them how you feel and everything, but it's just that's the way it's going to be for a little while. You know, the best thing we can do is just review them when they come out and have the discussion when the show comes out. That's all we can really do.
Yeah,
kind of sucks, but what you gonna do? Okay, let me get to the rest of the questions here. We got a few more. Okay, David wants to know, since Otakon is coming up, do you still go to any fan panels for fun? If so, what kind? Do you go to fan panels for fun?
I don't have the time. At last few several years, I have not had the time.
At AX, we don't straight up don't have the time.
Yeah. And I don't go to any other cons. I haven't in the couple last
when years. When I go to any convention that's not AX, mm-hmm. So Anime Los Angeles or even like San Diego or any of those other shows, I will usually drop into a fan panel or two. Admittedly, I go to the retro ones where they're talking about old stuff and show old stuff because, I don't know, it's nostalgic for me still to go. Like, if I'm sitting in a panel room and someone's having a panel and they're showing Daikon film, I'm like, well, things are still sort of normal, you know? Like, this experience hasn't changed that much, you know?
Your comfort zone?
Yeah, it's my comfort zone. And that stuff is fun, like, especially if there's an anniversary panel for something that I love. Like, it's the 30th anniversary or whatever, here's a big panel about, I'll go to that. But that's just for me. That's what I go to for my own enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Fan panels on other stuff, just to get a read on it or whatever. Nah, not really. I don't.
Usually for me, if it's like, oh, here's a fan panel about X show, like that's not one I'd really want to go to. But like, you know, stuff that like Mike does or where he's just like, here's all these really old dubs you've never heard of or stuff like that. Like
yeah.
I try and check that stuff
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that stuff is fun. I liked... Like Evan Minto does a burger panel that's fun to watch.
yeah, it's like stuff like that, silly stuff like that, or it's just I don't really get the. Usually, most fan panels are like, okay, well, we love Resident Evil, let's go to this Resident Evil panel and talk about Resident Evil. Like, usually, the people who present those like do not know like how to run a panel at all. Whereas the guys who have like a specific sort of subject and they build it out more editorially are the more fun ones, and those are the ones I try to go to.
Yeah. People who put a lot of effort in, I salute them. Okay, AngelX03 wants to know, on anime based on games with a main character gender choice, why do you think they default to male and treat the female as an omake? Well, the assumed audience is straight young men, so that's right. Why.
Well, and especially in anime adaptation with a lot of these fate things, the servant is usually a girl, and they want to play up the romantic
tension. Now, why is that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
big titty Roman Emperor.
She literally, like, no distinguishable anything as you would. Oh, it's Nero. Yeah. Like, at one point, she probably plays a fiddle, which Nero, I don't think, ever actually did.
No, that's just the most famous anecdote.
I'm reading a really good book right now on Roman history called SPQR, which is kind of a, of course, it's called that. But it's a very sort of pragmatic, like, fun to read history of early. It's really good. It's really good. Let's see. George, Land of Obscusion wants to know, with Saiki and Guru Guru having come back, Magic Circle Guru Guru, having come back after long hiatuses, which method do you prefer, complete reboot or long-awaited continuation? Complete reboot. 100% of the time. I don't like long-awaited continuation. I feel like it always feels like you missed a boat. Like, why are you bringing this back?
It depends on if...
Like, the show hasn't been on it. Saiki hasn't had episodes air for, like, 15 years.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about Full Metal Panic?
It depends, though, because, like, if it's been even as long as 8 years, and like, 8 years is too short a time to reanimate, like, material that's 26 episodes or whatever of it. Like, think about Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, which was too soon, I would say. I mean, a lot of people like it, but in terms of enthusiasm, I was like, whoa, this is too soon. But, like, the worst part of it is where they're trying to reanimate stuff that happened in the other show. They're caught in this weird place where they're, like, having to rush through it. Hello, Philly. They're having to rush through it, but also retain the details that are different in the comics and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, a reboot only if it's really been enough time and you're going to change it a lot. But, like, if it's been just 5 years, like, just continue it. I think it just depends. It's case by case. Like, if you're going to bring back fucking Fruits Basket, I would say it's possible to do a continuation. Like, you might want to reboot.
Why?
It.
But reboot
it's
it.
It's possible.
But you'll bring in a whole new crop of people.
That's true. It just, but there's
if they completely relaunch Sayuki with new character, with refreshed character designs and start it from the beginning, it's been 15 fucking years. Like, you'll bring in new people. If they don't start Fruits Basket from the beginning, that's commercial malpractice.
It's a bad idea. I'm just
and
saying,
the production committee should say, like, we're going to lose money on this if you don't start at the beginning.
But it could be frustrating for people who...
I mean, like, that's what blows my mind that they're actually continuing that.
But you think that audience is bigger than the potential new audience they would bring?
No, you're right. I completely see what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's case by case is all I'm saying.
You're probably right. I just, in my opinion, like, you should always just...
For instance, when they came back with Durarara, I'm glad they didn't just, like, try to start from the beginning for some fucking reason.
That show was not that old. It was only, like, 5 years old.
5 years.
That's it, though. You're talking about 20 years in some cases.
Very different.
Well, that's like I said, like, I that's why when I saw they're continuing the Tenchi OVA, like, that just sort of blows my mind. Like, who, like, that's so old. Like, what is the market for that? Like, who, other than the diehard fans, like, who's going to pick that up new and watch it?
Yeah. Bacano season 2, never going to happen.
Nope.
Never going to happen.
It's not going
to
happen.
Same with Slayers, like, they tried to bring that back like 3 or 4 years ago.
I'm just glad
to
we're
some
finally
success.
Getting the books.
Those sold pretty well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want them to reboot Slayers. Just continue.
Yeah, actually, they should.
All right,
I think they should do it with all the stuff from the 90s. Reboot Fushigi Yugi. Reboot. Sure, Escaflowne, do it. Reboot Slayers.
Okay, see, this is madman talk right here.
And they should hire me to give them these
and
great ideas.
And Fushigi Yugi, like, ended, so that's a little different.
Get off my desk.
Fushigi Yugi ended, so that's a little different, whereas Slayers kept going.
TV done.
They already rebooted Ava.
Yeah, they already did that.
They'll do it again, probably, in another 10 years.
God.
Sure.
Okay, well, this is a question. We're going to make this the last question. Wait, no, we're not, because it's a bummer, and I don't want to end on a bad note, but so someone asked, we were bitching about the movie Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets yesterday, because I finally saw it yesterday.
It
was bad.
It's so bad.
I hate it. The first 10 minutes were fucking sweet. The first 10 minutes of that movie where they're, like, putting together the giant space station and they're meeting all the alien races, I was about to lean over to you and be like, this is going to be so good. And immediately, the minute the main character shows up on screen, the movie goes boom into the...
Let's find the worst actors, like, for our film.
Cut my throat.
Let's find all of the worst actors possible to be our leads.
Like, I could not believe how bad the main character was.
I was shocked.
You know that guy's 31?
What?
Yes.
He looks like he's 15 years old.
Yeah. And he looks like an underdeveloped teenager.
31?
Yes, you're really having
what
trouble
the
with
fuck?
This. I know, it's upsetting.
I played a teenager in crime.
I know, it's upsetting.
I was That's so looking really forward to this. Thanks. Well,
it's a
save
bad
me some
movie.
Money.
It feels like it's like Luc Besson took the best parts of The Fifth Element and then kind of just here's everything I can think of to do with these concepts, and the computer can just do anything.
Yeah.
So let's spend $200 million just blowing all these concepts out, and the story is a mess, and it's not very compelling, and the two main characters spit out their bad quips.
I refuse to believe this man is 31.
He's 31 years old, man. Look it up.
I refuse to believe
it. I mean, I'm not saying that, like it wasn't a, like, the worst thing I've ever seen, or even the most unpleasant thing I've ever... Like, it wasn't...
Not possible.
It wasn't, like, horrible. It was just...
It's the pedigree, right? Like, the pedigree of The Fifth Element and Luc Besson's all his stuff.
Like, it really, like, and the way, like, every single scene is just stuffed to the gills with CG, and that's fine, and a lot of it looks really good, and the color design of the movie is really, really nice, and there's plenty of really good shots in it and everything. Luc Besson's a talented director who knows where to put the camera, knows what to do, and knows how to shoot action, and knows how to make it look good.
But the acting is worse.
But the story is bad, and the acting is significant, and the acting drags it down. If you had, like, crackerjack actors in there spitting these lines out and just killing it the whole time.
Then it could have been a shrug.
It could have. I'm convinced that no, the right actors could have elevated the material to a decent thing.
A
I
shrug.
Think. I disagree with you that it could only get to a shrug. I'm saying it could be a little bit better than a shrug. I'm saying that the right actors could have elevated that material. If you cast someone who's like a Harrison Ford character in the Harrison Ford role and he's good at doing that,
yeah.
It will elevate the whole movie. This did not have that, in spite of most of the runtime being centered around this Han Solo type who is completely unconvincing.
Did
the
puberty
entire
just
time.
Skip this man?
I don't know, but it wasn't.
He's 31?
I just, yeah. Whereas we saw Spider-Man, and I thought Spider-Man was great. I liked Spider-Man a lot. It was very entertaining.
My age.
Like, also surprised he's like in his 20s, too.
Like, I can't.
Guy does not look in his 20s.
Tom Holland looks
my
like
brain
he's 12.
Is shutting down.
Well, that's good because we're about to wrap the show up.
Okay.
Here. That's a good thing. Let's see. We were asked about the live action One Piece television series, which right now I'm pretty sure is a press release and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I kind of am not I don't really like talking about these like announced live action projects because the point is to get people talking about it on social media, mm-hmm. and then use the social media response to get funding for your thing.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. and then he was out there saying, like, this is going to be really expensive, which sounds like a terrible idea. Yeah. Like, I can't get behind it.
I don't
think a live-action One Piece is a good idea.
Period. And don't
at
spend
all.
A bazillion
I don't think
dollars.
It's a good idea. It's like live-action Popeye, which didn't work either.
Yeah, that's to say, that happened.
That's a fucking Robert Altman movie that's not good. You know, like, there's, you know, which there are Robert Altman movies that aren't good, but, like, that one's really not good. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, anyway, I don't think it's a good idea.
I just want to see what happens, but like no faith really that it'll be good.
Yeah, live action Fate. That's what we need.
Yeah, that should have happened already. Like that needs to happen soon.
That would be a good live action adaptation. Make Fate.
Yeah,
that would be cool. I bet you they're planning it. They must be.
That's the thing. So
they must be planning that.
So we have an interview going up on site tomorrow.
Yeah,
and their thesis with bringing over like Fate Grand Order and localizing the mobile game and stuff like that is they're like, well, we want to mainstream Fate worldwide. We've been endeavoring to mainstream it over time, like since 2004. They've taken out
so
the
Fate Extella is here.
Yeah, that was that's a little different. But I think overall they're trying to make Fate more palatable to a wider audience, and there's a lot they're gonna do to do that. But
yeah.
But I mean, one thing they could do definitely is like, hey, make a live action version of it and take out the otaku. Not all of the some of the otaku stuff makes Fate what it is, but take out the worst aspects of the otaku stuff. And yes, you could very easily mainstream this premise.
I think if you had like Pixar quality animation and made a One Piece movie that way, that could be cool.
Yeah,
that could be neat. That could be actually really neat looking.
But
if they like, really tried really hard, like if they okay, you remember like the Peanuts movie?
Yeah.
What if they put as much effort into recreating the look and feel of something for One Piece in 3D animation as they did for the Peanuts movie? Like
right.
They really, really spent a long time trying to get Oda's look exactly right in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
That could be really cool.
Right.
Or like that Genndy Tartakovsky Popeye thing. Speaking of Popeye,
right?
That was like pitch perfect, right? Like it looked exactly how you would think a 3D cartoon Popeye would look. Well, imagine that for One Piece, like that level of dedication to making it look right. That could be awesome.
Yeah, but not live action. Like I like how immediately after that was announced, I saw a lot of people on Twitter comment. The first thing that popped into my head was terrible CG rubber arms stretching out. Like this is the first you think like
you're going to see the trailer.
Terrible early 2000s, mid 2000s, like Fantastic Four. Like that's the first thing everybody thought of, and they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. My thing would be like if they did it CG. I would hope it would be more like that Popeye short or Peanuts and not like the Tintin movie where it looks weird and motion captured.
I like Tintin.
I liked Tintin.
I thought it was a neat movie, but like it does look weird in motion captured.
Well, it's Mars
like,
Needs Moms.
Yeah, it's a bit. Yeah.
It's Mars Needs Moms.
It which, wasn't full yeah. Mars Needs Moms, so I
yeah, it's the okay. best looking of those films.
Exactly.
That Tintin is the, like between like A Christmas Carol, Mars Needs Moms, and the other like the BFG is one of those movies which no one fucking saw.
Yeah, we tried to watch it and failed.
Yeah, I got about 10.
It was like, oh, this
20
is the most boring
thing
on the planet.
Wow, this is boring.
Yeah.
I like Tintin, but I guess Mars Needs Moms is the sort of worst one.
Beowulf, that's the other one I'm thinking of.
Oh, geez, Beowulf.
Yeah. I liked Beowulf.
I mean, I liked what it was trying to do, but it definitely had the dead eyes.
It was a cool movie.
I would say Tintin is the only one I've seen that didn't have the dead eyes. So
I liked the script on Beowulf.
Exactly.
And the execution wasn't too bad. It's just the animation wasn't quite there yet.
The dead eyes.
That movie's like 10 years old now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to compare it to that because it's been 10 years. So like the technology's definitely gotten better. But I sort of, but like with these things though, it's like the Cowboy Bebop thing. Like they just talk about it to try and get interest, and doesn't really go anywhere. And it's like you can't really speculate that much because who knows what will happen to it in the end.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Anyway, we got to wrap up. Hey everybody, Brady, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everybody in the chat, thank you very much for dropping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all those things here, right here on YouTube. And we'll see you all next week. Thank you very much. Have a good one, guys.
Bye.